Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome. It is Monday, February 28th, the final day in February for this 2011. No leap year this year, if I check the calendar properly. My name is Aaron Dykes. I'm filling in for Alex. He's up in New York today. We just saw a segment on The View with ABC with over 30 million viewers talking about the Charlie Sheen incident. Alex will be popping in on the broadcast later to talk about that clip. We're going to play it for you just after the break. Of course, we're going to cover everything going on in the Middle East, primarily Libya, and everything about Gaddafi and the Eastern Rebel Forces, and whether or not the U.S. is going to intervene on a humanitarian or other pretext. We will also cover the refugees headed to Egypt and also Tunisia, two countries that just got out of the frying pan. And later in the broadcast, we will have James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com. He's going to help break down the Middle East crisis, and we're going to talk about the rise of global government, which, of course, the Middle East arc of crisis, destabilization, kind of juicy region is a big part of. But we will get into that later. And then in the third hour, we're going to have a replay of Catherine Austin Fitz. And that is all coming up after the break. Right now, we want to cover some of the Libya stuff. Obama's humanitarian conquest of Libya. That's Paul Joseph Watson from today. When his predator drone attack kills 90% innocents, president suddenly develops a conscience for human suffering. Here we have Obama given the Nobel Peace Prize, supposedly on the idea that he's going to end war in the Middle East, but instead he's just gearing up for a wider war, and we can only pray that doesn't become World War III or Iran or anything really big. We also have Kurt Nimmo. The Libyans say no thanks to globalist intervention. These are the rebel forces that are held up in the eastern city of Benghazi, and they have said foreign intervention would not be welcome, the Daily Caller reports. They do not want foreign intervention. They want to deal with Gaddafi on their own terms. We have, of course, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. We have John McCain. We have Joe Lieberman, all working in the region, trying to kick this thing off under whatever pretext they will walk away with. Right now, they're going to use the humanitarian buzzword, it appears. An old favorite, if you go back to, I'll bring this up later, Jim Tucker has always talked about how the Bilderbergers love those smaller humanitarian reasons, just like the wars in the Balkans, rather than the bigger wars like Iraq. They had to fight in Bilderberg for the Iraq war. But they love the smaller scale stuff where the U.S. and the world government forces, the United Nations and NATO, tend to look better as though they're doing something good. But really, it's a you break it, you buy it policy. And they are shifting everything in the Middle East right now, particularly in Libya. We also have Egypt bans gold exports. Egypt is not allowing gold, at least for individuals, to go out of the country at the moment. A decree banning the export of gold in all of its forms, including jewelry and ornaments, was issued by newly appointed Trade Minister Samir Al-Sayed, and it takes effect immediately until June 30th. That will surely have repercussions on the world market. That's in Reuters. And, of course, we have Egypt looking to rewrite its constitution as it's currently under military control. That will be interesting to see how that develops. Then we have things like DNA genetic pat-down introduced by airports, and they're going to be using this on immigrants and other people, but we know it's going to spread wider. More on that when we get back, and Alex Jones on The View, injecting real issues through the pop culture. When we get back, this is Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. I'm Aaron Dykes.
Hello, friends. This is Alex Jones. You've heard me talk about Calden 5-star soaps for years.
brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are back on Infowars.com, the Alex Jones Show. I am Aaron Dykes filling in till Alex gets back. He's in New York as we speak. He just came off of The View, the ABC show that has over 30 million viewers. He was on live talking about the Charlie Sheen celebrity, what would be a distraction. But Alex took the opportunity and really pulled a true Infowars interjection of real media issues when they had him on to discuss celebrity, you know, Charlie's drug situation, whether he's off drugs or on drugs, and what's going on with the show. I don't know. I do know Charlie Sheen has been a good friend to 9/11 Truth for all these years. It was almost 5 years ago that he broke in and came on this show and raised some serious questions with his big celebrity name and really got a lot of people to take a closer look at 9/11, which, of course, later led to the C-SPAN conference. We'll get back into that in a minute. Right now, we want to play that clip from The View, Alex Jones, on just this morning, February 28th, only a few minutes ago, and we're going to play that right now and then break it down for you.
You just saw a portion of an interview that Charlie Sheen did with ABC correspondent Amanda Cannigan, where he passionately defends his lifestyle of drug use and partying, but it all started with a radio show rant last Thursday that prompted CBS to cancel the rest of the season of his hit sitcom. And we just want to show a little bit of the clip, and then you'll meet the man he was talking to. Take a look.
Chaim Levine, yeah, that's Chuck's real name, mistook this rock star for his own selfish exit strategy, bro. Check it, Alex. I embarrassed him in front of his children and the world by healing at a pace that his unevolved mind cannot process. Okay, last I checked, Chaim, I've spent, I think, close to the last decade, I don't know, effortlessly and magically converting your tin cans into pure gold.
Well, joining now is the radio show host and close friend of Charlie Sheen, the man he was talking to, Alex Jones. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. If I could just say one thing, I've known Charlie for about 6.5 years. He's never drunk alcohol, used drugs in front of me. He's been completely clean for almost a decade until about 7 months ago. Now he's come off the drugs and the alcohol, which is almost like, you know, being off your meds. It has the same effect. So he's supercharged. He's angry. He's focused. And I know that when they interviewed him at his house, because I talked to him, they interviewed him for about 2 hours. And that's a little kind of joke that's out of context. He's tired of being judged and him being held up as the ultimate demon in this world. He didn't kill a million people in Iraq. He wasn't involved with the takedown of Building 7 here in New York. And he thinks there's bigger devils out there than himself. And Chuck Lorre's put out a whole bunch of these cue cards while having management tell him a month ago, if you speak out against 4 episodes being cut, we're going to fire you. Then he starts putting out all of these. Chuck Lorre. He starts putting out. He starts putting out vanity cards, not just on 2.5 Men, but on other shows saying Charlie Sheen is dead inside and soulless. You didn't show the worst one there. And so Charlie's told, we're tying your hands. Now we're going to beat you up for whatever contract negotiations.
Let me ask you. So the question that I have is, so you're saying Chuck Lorre started this?
With the vanity card.
With the vanity
card. And up front had management, according to Charlie, and I've been there when he's on the phone with his management or his manager comes over.
You're talking too fast for me, baby. Slow down.
No, I know we don't have a lot of time. I'm getting it on record.
Right.
They told him, before he said a word, they said, we're doing this, and if you criticize it, you're going to be fired. And he said, why are you telling me this? You know, I'm going through a hard time right now. But he didn't understand it then. I think they're trying to make him quit or something, so they have to pay out his contract or the $100 million in syndication. I think there's some shenanigans going on here. But and then they start putting these things out. Then they start putting these vanity cards out, trying to prod him and push him.
People with vanity cards are. I don't think people know.
Okay, most shows have a logo at the end, you know, like a little dog or the MGM lion. Chuck Lorre has these big write-ups at the end of his show. And imagine at the end of the show with Charlie Sheen and other CBS shows.
This is on air.
This is on air saying this man is soulless. This man is dead inside.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, because from that clip that we saw, a lot of people would ascertain, okay, or assume that Charlie was on drugs again. You say he wasn't. Do you think
he's taking blood tests?
Do you think he's...
I've been at his house when they come in, take the blood,
take
the urine.
That. I take your word.
I was there
that.
2 weeks ago.
Do you? I hear you. Do you think he's manic depressive? I mean, as a friend, do you say, okay, this is something else? You guys are missing the boat. It's not the drugs. He's actually suffering from manic depressive disorder.
Let's just remember, you know, Charlie's been a star. Charlie's been a star for 30 years, and all people know about is these episodes where he explodes. The Charlie Sheen I know is a compassionate guy who's really smart.
The episodes where he explodes.
I think
he was saying, you know, this is the best thing that happened to the people who were with me. They're never going to regret it. They had
the
best pan. You know, this is on drugs, tearing up rooms and hotels. What about that explosion?
I know this. I don't use illegal drugs, but when I quit smoking, I've had a long battle with that. I feel horrible for a week, and about a week later, my wife says, please, just go back to smoking sometimes because I get so manic. And I think we have a similar physiology. A lot of people have that physiology.
He was not giving it up at that point. He was on the drugs and booze.
Oh, you're talking about the last few months.
Do you think there's something underlying here that people are missing as a friend?
I just think that he's somebody going through a hard time who got clean, and that's why I went out to California to help him. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's wrong for them to be prodding him, yes, and demonizing him and trying to make him blow up. That's actually what I believe is going on here. They should all just shake hands, bury the hatchet, come together for the crew of 2.5 Men. I want try to support Charlie, but also Chuck Lorre, everybody else. But understand what happened.
Okay, so you're worried about it.
But Charlie's tired of being held up like the devil. We got the TSA putting their hand down people's pants. Infowars.com covers it all. We've got the banks bankrupting the U.S.
Wait. Let's stick with Charlie because that's way too much for me.
Charlie is mad.
I understand.
Because he's held up as all the problems.
That.
He didn't steal $23.7 trillion.
But we're just here to figure out what is happening with Charlie. That's what we're trying to figure out.
And he's doing interviews now, so he has a chance to speak for himself. And
but they're taken out of context.
Look, we're not comparing him to Gaddafi.
Oh, they've been comparing him to Gaddafi.
Look, I was just saying, I don't think I've
ever heard George Bush, $1 million Iraqis to Gaddafi.
Are we going to really go there like that?
Torture, secret arrest, America turning into a police state.
Are we going to go there? We're asking you about your friend.
I think we were here to talk about Charlie Sheen. I'm not trying to cut you off.
Charlie says you have a right to kill him, but not to judge him, as Colonel Kurtz said.
Thank you. You are certainly a wonderful friend.
And helping
Thank you,
Charlie. Stay clean. We love you. And everybody else out there, stay clean. Don't use drugs. Infowars.com.
That's a good message. Okay.
Infowars.com.
All right, when we come back, our series.
Infowars.com. Okay, that is Alex Jones using the media tool for what it's there for, to interject real issues. There's over 30 million viewers on The View. You've seen a lot of really influential people go on there, even though they just cover celebrity news. You've got all these people trapped in that false world of celebrity news, petty issues of who's dating who and who went where. And Alex directly took it on and tried to interject, bring people back to the real issues, torture, secret arrest. He mentioned that over 1 million dead Iraqis. He mentioned that Building 7 was collapsed. He mentioned how TSA is sticking their hands down people's pants. He's mentioned how over $23.7 trillion have been looted and stolen through this whole derivative scam. He mentioned how Charlie is being compared with Gaddafi. And here we have petty celebrity issues. And, you know, we don't know what's going on with Charlie Sheen, but we wish him well. It's his personal life. And then we have real issues going on in the world, Gaddafi and the rest of it. And somehow Charlie is supposed to be of equal weight. But that's just the cycle of celebrity news. That's the way it goes. But I thought Alex did an amazing job of really trying to bring people back around to what's really important in this world, albeit on a celebrity show that covers these kind of topics day in and day out. But you have seen The View cover other substantial topics. And Rosie O'Donnell really put herself on the line and used that platform to cover a lot of 9/11 truth issues. And now Alex, live on the show, is using it to cover 9/11 and other issues, really. And they didn't want to talk about the Bush issues, how controversial it is that Bush just blatantly lied about WMDs, invaded Iraq without a real pretext, why we're still in Afghanistan after almost a decade, why Obama, who supposedly is supposed to be ending these wars, is just expanding them. And, you know, now we see everything going on in northern Africa. It's just an expansion of the Mideast tension that's been going on. And so how refreshing for a bunch of housewives to see questions they may not even be familiar with. What is he talking about, a million dead Iraqis? They never reported that on the mainstream news. Certainly, Building 7 has been little reported except in the alternative news. It's very interesting. Last week, we just saw heard about Mancow's interview with Donald Rumsfeld. Said he had never heard about Building 7. Certainly a blatant lie, but at least he's being asked these questions. Just before that, he had been asked at the CPAC conference what happened to those missing $2.3 trillion the Pentagon admitted it couldn't account for. Rumsfeld just lied again and said, well, it was always there. The point is, we see these questions still being raised after the Bush administration has faded away as they're trying to rebrand themselves. Even so, we see that those things are not forgotten. Anyway, being what it is, The View, I think Alex did an excellent job. I'm sure he'll be calling in as soon as he can to tell us what happened behind the scenes and what he thought what happened. But you saw Barbara Walters and Whoopi Goldberg didn't really want to talk about the things Alex brought up. They just wanted to get back to the Charlie Sheen issues, and that is what it is. But we need to bring up these other issues as well. Now, when we get back, we are going to get into the Middle East, and we'll be hearing from Alex soon. I am Aaron Dykes for InfoWars. Alex will be back tomorrow, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Baby, I'm gonna leave you. What if I say I'm not like the others? What if I say I'm not just another one of your plays? You're the pretender. What if I say I will never surrender?
We're back at InfoWars.com. I am Aaron Dykes, filling in for Alex Jones. And as we just heard, he was in New York on ABC's The View, talking to more than 30 million viewers, really about the Charlie Sheen celebrity business. But he interjected as many real issues as he could, including Building 7, the death toll in Iraq, and more. And the only other thing I want to say about Charlie Sheen is he's been fighting this 9/11 issue really for almost 5 years publicly. It was in March 2006 when I started here at InfoWars, almost 5 years ago to the day, tomorrow it will be. And it was only a couple weeks after that that Charlie came on and first went public for 9/11 Truth. And ever since, he put on the 9/11 conference in Los Angeles that was picked up by C-SPAN and reached millions. And then a couple years after that, he came out with his 20 Minutes to the President, a really strong and bold challenge to President Obama to address the outstanding questions on 9/11, to not be the warmonger that he was apparently fitted in the suit to be, to expand these wars in the Middle East. Sheen really laid down the gauntlet and asked some real questions that are a lot bigger than his personal life. We wish him well. Whatever he's involved in really is his personal business. But here we have Alex taking kind of the celebrity culture and milking it to try to get people back into mainstream issues. And so if Sheen has launched that again for us and brought more viewers to us to cover real topics because of his celebrity scandals and what's going on with his TV show, that could be good for us in a way. But moving on to more directly substantial news, we really see commodities, oil, everything else is flaring up because of the tensions in the Middle East. And adding to that tension is the fact that Egypt is banning gold exports. The miners say they will not be affected. We have a military dictatorship temporarily ruling in Egypt until they potentially rewrite their constitution and until they have elections. What they say probably will be 4 months. It could be a lot longer, but for the time being, we have Egypt on Sunday banned the export of gold for the next 4 months, a measure bankers said seemed aimed at preventing businessmen and former government officials who acquired capital illegally from transferring it abroad. An official from a gold mine in Egypt says he was confident it was not aimed at gold production, but at individual exports. A decree banning the export of gold in all its forms, including jewelry and ornaments, was issued by newly appointed Trade Minister Samira Said. It will take effect immediately. So they say it's targeted at individuals, I guess in theory, to stop looting. But I would only imagine it puts a little bit of pressure on the gold market. And that is Egypt bans gold exports. In another area of news, we have this whole thing where Homeland Security now thinks it could take your DNA in the name of stopping human trafficking and illegal trade of various kinds. They say DNA genetic pat-down will be introduced to airports by DHS. Of course, it's going to be targeted at foreigners and immigrants first, but we know better. It's going to come around to affect almost everyone. Already the measures at the airport are far too invasive, but the protests really will only expand into greater technology. Interesting how that works, that when people say no, they don't want to be patted down, they don't want to go through an x-ray body scanner, they don't think that there's a reason to violate the Fourth Amendment just to fly on a plane. Here we see, even though they're standing down currently at airports, even at LAX and really big airports across the country, they are mainly not doing pat-downs because of all the backlash of public, lack of public support, but yet they're rolling out these other measures. Here we have DNA genetic pat-down introduced by airports by DHS. A new level of invasive screening is scheduled for airports this summer. A portable DNA scanner to conduct on-site real-time genetic testing. Real-time genetic testing. This technology is being implemented under the cover of combating human trafficking, illegal immigration, and finding missing persons. But Richard Selden of NetBio, creator of the scanners, clearly states that DNA information has the potential part of the fabric of day-to-day life. So first, they have x-ray body scanners that they claim they don't save the image. They claim they can't see your naked genitalia. All lies. And now they're going to take actual DNA samples. This is an activist post reading. We also have a Mike Adams Natural News. And I see we're coming up on that break, so we'll just continue on the other side. But how dare TSA, how dare Homeland Security first try to cop a feel and then try to get your actual DNA? How dangerous is this technology going to become? We're going to talk about some of those questions on the other side. I'm Aaron Dykes, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv. We will be back after the break. And odors half the point. That's the point of Pomade. I really like that movie, A Brother Where Art Thou. We are back at Infowars.com. I am Aaron Dykes. That intro music is from Oh Brother Where Art Thou. We're going to be joined by Alex in just about 10 or 15 minutes. He's going to break down his appearance on The View, and who knows, whatever he saw backstage. I don't know if he got a chance to talk with the talent, but he was just on with over 30 million viewers, and I'm on with probably a fraction of that, but we are still reaching millions around the world and having a big impact. Some breaking news from the New York Times, February 28th. Obama set to ease health law requirements. Seeking to appease disgruntled governors, Obama plans to announce on Monday he supports amending the 210 health care law to allow states to opt out of its most burdensome requirements 3 years earlier than currently permitted. Senior administration officials said Obama would reveal to the National Governors Association in a speech on Monday morning that he backs the legislation that would enable states to request federal permission to withdraw from the law's mandates in 2014 rather than 2017. So whatever happens in the grander scheme, we definitely see there's a great deal of opposition to the health care law. Alaska, among others, has said just outright, no, we're not going to implement this. And right now, most of the governors are in Washington, D.C., meeting with Obama. And obviously, the health care stuff is at the top of the list, and he is at least nominally caved on certain issues. We will see how things play out down the road. But back in this other issue, we have DHS and TSA looking to bring a DNA swab, a DNA test, a live full DNA scan at the airport. If you fall, at least at first, under the foreigner, immigrant, we don't know your background, your unverified kind of status. But how quickly is that going to branch out into everyone? We're going to see, because we know there is so much more going on with DNA. Let's check out Natural News, Mike Adams. After touching your junk, the TSA wants to scan and harvest your DNA. As if it's not enough for the TSA to fill you up at the airport, they are now experimenting with rapid results DNA scanners that can scan and analyze your DNA using just a drop of saliva. Just a drop. Spit at the TSA agent who is molesting you, in other words, and they can use that saliva to scan your DNA and then store it in a government database. Why would they want to do that? We can only imagine. Remember, it was Alex Jones who broke the story about hospitals secretly taking blood samples of babies, handing them over to the federal government for use in National Genetic Database. The government routinely steals genetic material for people for its own nefarious purposes, as does the pharmaceutical industry. For example, the medical industry's so-called HeLa cells, which have been exploited for decades by vaccine and drug companies, were harvested and stolen decades ago without permission or consent. It's never without permission or consent, and we know it's not benign. We know there's been a national DNA registry database going on for almost 40 years, I believe. And what they're doing with that DNA is unfathomable in some ways. We know the eugenicists will be using it for race-specific bioweapons. They'll be using it, sure, for a little bit of ancestry and where did you come from and who are your forebears, but they will also be using it in the military-industrial complex to build very specific, very high-tech weapons. And that is all scary enough. Back in the activist post, the current focus on DNA extraction and databasing is a well-known globalist initiative stated by the UN to register every newborn. This initiative has the full support of globalist and population control advocates. Bill Gates, of course, who would like to see a universal birth registry that would presumably tie in to his universal vaccine program. Additionally, globalist behemoths such as the RAND Corporation have issued documents that identify an interest in biotechnology for the purpose of population reduction, cloning, to identify, understand, manipulate, improve, and control living organisms. That's right. When they build vaccines, it would be very useful to have a large sample of DNA. And where are they going to get it? Hospitals, of course, would be first, but now the idea that they would be taking it from an airport test, it's difficult to deal with because it's such a violation of the Fourth Amendment. It's such a gross continuation of really quickly, rapidly expanding power. Homeland Security existed prior to 2001 9/11 attacks, but it didn't gain power until the Patriot Act. And since that time, we've just seen a crazy power grab. You know, first you got to take off your shoes. First they got to scan your luggage. Then you got to go through an X-ray machine. Then you have to get patted down and have your genitalia touched. And now it's going to come to a genetic pat down, a DNA test. And they say they can do it in under an hour, and it'll be very cheap, only $100. So I'm sure that's all the more reason that lots of people will have to put up with that. And it's just sickening. But the far bigger news is definitely going on in the Middle East. And Alex will be joining us momentarily. But until that time, I wanted to read part of Paul Joseph Watson's Obama's Humanitarian Conquest of Libya. And this is all about how they're going to use these crises to gain greater control in the region, the Middle East and Northern Africa. It's really all along what they call an arc of crisis, all the way from Eastern Europe down through North Africa, through the Middle East, over into Eastern Asia. and it just kind of wraps around crescent shape, conveniently encircling Russia, putting China on the spot. It's really been part of the stratagem since pre-World War II. Spikeman developed the coined the term Rimland, but today you would probably recognize it as Zbigniew Brzezinski's grand chessboard. And here on the microcosm to do with Libya, we see, you know, Gaddafi has really kicked in his heels. He's standing his ground, while the rebels in the east have really gained steam. We have, before President Barack Obama even took office, we warned that his administration would continue to follow the Bush-era policy of bankrupting both America, both financially and morally, with new wars. But that these conquests would be done in the name of humanitarian crisis rather than a preemptive assault. Because that's the whole Democrats thing. The Republicans always go in strong arm, using the straightforward tactics, preemptive war. But the Democrats are just as warlike. They've continued all these things for all these decades, but they prefer to go in a Balkan style as the overseers, the globalist friendlies, if you will, just overseeing the splits and the regional divides, truly in just the most direct fashion, using divide and conquer to take over the region. We see that Paul Watson writes, the international crisis that Vice President Joe Biden warned Obama would face has now arrived, with the increasingly chaotic situation in Libya forging a pretext for military intervention on behalf of the United States, NATO, and the United Nations. The prevalence of U.S. military-industrial complex, even under a government that promised peace, was guaranteed all along. Under a democratic administration, wars remain the health of the state. Only the rhetoric behind their justification is different. By citing humanitarian concerns as a pretext, the Obama administration could send U.S. troops into battle safe in the knowledge that they can rely on left cover. The vitriol that accompanied Bush's foreign adventures will be non-existent. And we will really see if the anti-war left steps up to the challenge and denounces this intervention in Libya. We have a companion to that article, Kurt Nimmo, Libyans, no thanks to globalist intervention. So even the rebels dealing with Gaddafi do not want the United Nations, do not want NATO, do not want Secretary Clinton in their country telling them how to operate things. But then it goes back. I went to the Bilderberg Conference in 2006 and 2008 protesting with Alex Jones, meeting with Jim Tucker, who has been following this for what seems like millennia, something like 30 years, the Bilderberg Group. And he's really tracked how the Balkan War was something they liked because it was low-key and there were very few critics, very few watchful eyes seeing what's going on as they divided the former Yugoslavian region into all the smaller countries. We see Croatia is protesting even today. But they really liked the humanitarian intervention causes in that area, and they're going to use it again in the Middle East because it's a lot of mental energy. It's a lot of sure, they have good things when they go in strong for the Iraq war, the Afghanistan war, but they do have to have a pretext. And simply put, humanitarian is one of the easiest sells for them. But they really like how it doesn't draw as much criticism. But war is war, and Obama was supposed to bring our troops back from the region, and he's brought back a token amount from Iraq. More contractors went in. But we really see now how he's expanding a wider regional war. We can only hope it doesn't involve Iran, although we know they've been eyeing them all along. We can only hope something like a World War III doesn't come up from this. More from Kurt Nimmo's article. Following Secretary of State Clinton's call for intervention, a rebel leader in Libya has stated his country does not want or need any help from the United States and its globalist partners. Hafiz Goga, a spokesman for the newly formed National Libyan Council in the rebel-controlled eastern city of Benghazi, said foreign intervention would not be welcome, the Daily Caller reports. The rest of Libya will be liberated by the people, and Gaddafi's security forces will be eliminated by the people of Libya. Now, all this stuff is happening while there's over 100,000 what they're calling refugees, which feeds right into the humanitarian pretext. We have something on the order of 55,000 trying to head back to Egypt on the right. another part of that balance headed to Tunisia, the smaller country to the left of Libya. It really is interesting how those three countries flared up in a very regional context, all having protests at the same time. We also see there's protest in Oman, really just all over the place. They're reporting that Oman protest will not stop the oil flow, at least not yet. But we're going to see a lot of pressure on those kind of things coming up in the future. More on the Egypt situation, behind the scenes of Egypt's revolution. I'm not sure I can pronounce this name. It's out of the Hurriyet Daily News. That's Turkey. And they really call out some of the geostrategic motives behind the Egypt revolution. And skipping down a few paragraphs, they really talk about how following the breakup of the Soviet Empire, the proliferation of color revolutions throughout former communist countries also appeared spontaneous and driven by the popular will. However, in hindsight, it has come to light that that their organization and planning was funded by the West. So all the things you saw happening after the fall of the Soviet Empire that seemed spontaneous, in hindsight, were not as spontaneous. Will that be the case with Egypt, with Libya, with Tunisia, with the rest of them? We'll see, but I think there's a good case for it. They go on to say, rather than spontaneous and popular, nowadays these revolutions have often been called orchestrated. The people of Ukraine, Georgia, Kyrgyzstan were all manipulated by U.S. intelligence agencies and NGOs like the Freedom House and the Albert Einstein Institute to overthrow their Russian leadership. And we know the same Freedom House, the same Albert Einstein Institute, the same pro-Western, pro-democracy demonstrations, the thing that happened at Columbia University. We all know they're part of this online Twitter generation revolution that's happening in the Middle East. So what's this about the recent events in Egypt? Is the Middle East now being remade in the shadow of Zbigniew Brzezinski's Arc of Crisis? In this context, Gene Sharp and the Albert Einstein Institute appear crucial. Sharp, also known as the Machiavelli of Nonviolence or the Clausewitz of Nonviolent Warfare, has written a great many books on civilian-based defense and democracy that can serve as blueprints from popular uprisings against authoritarian regimes. On the Institute's website, many books, such as From Dictatorship to Democracy, are available. So they just go into how the NGOs really working for NATO and Western interest. And in particular, how WikiLeaks revealed that the U.S. had been trying to topple the Egyptian president for more than 3 years. And so that stuff is just shocking. And we also see Egypt aims to alter the voting rules. So while it's under military dictatorship, they are going to rewrite the Constitution. They have a committee set up, but there's a lot of critics of that committee who are not happy with the way it's been set up and don't think the reforms are going to go deep enough. So we have this great revolution happening, and people are wondering if a so-called democracy can be the result. We'll certainly see, but it's, you know, tenuous at best. I read what Charles Krauthammer had written. I don't agree with much of what he says, but he's right in saying that everyone has a right to be happy after the first few days of the revolution, but this isn't 1789, this isn't the French Revolution anymore, and we're a lot wiser to some of the tricks that can happen after the fact, after the cause for celebration. We see Egypt uprising repudiates Al-Qaeda, so says John McCain. John McCain and none other than Lieberman are visiting the area and trying to influence Egypt after the toppling of Hosni Mubarak. This revolution is a repudiation of Al-Qaeda, Senator John McCain, an Arizona Republican, said after talks with Arab League chief Amer Moussa. This revolution has shown the people of the world, not just in the Arab world, that peaceful change can come about from the violence and extremism that is not required in order to achieve democracy and freedom. So you're going to have democracy not just at the barrel of a gun, but at the barrel of a humanitarian aid, at the barrel of Senator McCain, Lieberman, and Clinton's design. Before the revolution, they said, it was thought there were only two choices. On the one hand, a secular dictatorship. On the other hand, a fear of religious extremist dictatorship, Lieberman said. There is a third way, that Egypt has shown the world that it's a peaceful democratic future and that it's inclusive of the widest range of people. That certainly is very hopeful, but whether or not it's realistic, we will see in due time. We have Farrakhan saying that the Middle East uprisings will come to the U.S., and he has called upon President Obama to allow protesters to march, urging the president not to attack innocent people. I don't know if that's that extreme. I don't, you know, it comes off almost as a joke, because you wouldn't expect Obama to fire on protesters. But there in Wisconsin, we do see the National Guard being mobilized to potentially be used against protesters. And if Obama would do the same, if things spread to a more national protest, we would really see what happens. Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam leader, predicted on Sunday that America faces imminent uprisings that mirror those of the Middle East. What you are looking at in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Libya, in Bahrain, will what you see happening there. You'd better prepare because it will be coming to your door, Farrakhan said in a booming voice. Thousands of followers cheering in his wake. Farrakhan again asked Obama to allow protesters to march, urging the president not to attack innocent people. And that is what they do in foreign countries, and we only hope it doesn't come to the U.S., but we can see the flare point is coming. And we will be back after this break. Alex Jones will be joining us shortly. I don't know his exact schedule in New York. He was just on ABC's The View. Okay, we are back. It is Aaron Dykes in for Alex. We are waiting on him to pop in the next few minutes. But until he does, all this stuff going on in Libya is really coming to a flashpoint. We have world leaders uniting against Gaddafi. We have Obama calling for Gaddafi's immediate departure. We have old friend Tony Blair, who had a close relationship with Gaddafi, now telling him to stop killing Libyan protesters. And so all the world is really saying, you know, you're no good, Gaddafi, even though the things our country does, that the globalists do are far worse or on the same scale. Of course, firing on protesters is abhorrent and in no way defensible. But then again, Gaddafi's one of these leaders. He's now the longest serving current non-royal leader. And there's so many dictators in Africa. I have the list somewhere here. He's on his 41st year, and I believe there are, I'm not sure how many other, but I've got my list here. Gaddafi, 41 years, 180 days. He's the number one for non-royal leaders, longest serving. Cameroon, Paul Biya, 35 years. Ali Abdul Saleh in North Yemen, 32 years. Equatorial Guinea. The leader's name is Mbasogo. He's been in there for 31 years. Jose Eduardo de los Santos in Angola for 31 years. Mugabe in Zimbabwe, 30 years. Iranian, the supreme leader in Iran anyway, has been in there 29 years. Ali Khamenei. Cambodia's leader has been in there 26 years. Uganda, 26 years. Burkina Faso, for 23 years, of course, not all in Africa, but quite a few of them in Africa. So there is an issue with dictators and so-called presidents overstaying their welcome. And, of course, on the surface, it would be nice if countries like Egypt did take on constitutional amendments, two-term limits, eight-year total, very U.S. style. Of course, that's good on the surface, but the important thing is who's manipulating the strings behind the scenes, and with McCain, Clinton, and the rest in the region, that's, of course, very suspect. And of course, we see McCain and Lieberman are asking the U.S. to fund the opposition in Libya, to put arms and money in the hands of the anti-Gaddafi leaders. And Gaddafi is no one to love, although he is very colorful. But I think this whole funding the opposition has gotten us into more trouble than it's worth, particularly in the Mideast region. The prime example would be Afghanistan, the Taliban leaders, the Mujahideen, that Brzezinski funded back in the late 70s covertly so that they could resist the Russians and the Soviet Empire in its way would break down in the graveyard of empires in Afghanistan. But it all comes around, what goes around, that is. And it's our turn to falter in the Middle East, in Afghanistan still, after nearly a decade. And now we're going to be funding more rebel leaders after just being criticized for backing Mubarak and funding him and giving him arms, allowing him to dig in for over 30 years in Egypt. Now we want to fund more opposition leaders in Libya just to oust Gaddafi. Meanwhile, going in there under a humanitarian crisis, I think it might be better to take a Ron Paul stature and just get our troops home. Let's let that region be. Let's be friends with them. Let's advise them. And we shouldn't allow them to shoot protesters, but let's be very careful. We'll be back after the break. Infowars.com.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
I am not Alex Jones. I'm Aaron Dykes, but I am filling in for Alex, and he should be popping in anytime now. We don't know his schedule precisely up in New York. He's just been on ABC's The View, reaching millions with Sheen information, but also a lot of very important globalist information about the takeover and the quest for world government. And of course, that is what's going on as we look to the regional conflicts in the Middle East. Current events unfolding every moment for the past several weeks. It may not be immediately apparent to the average speculator, to the average spectator. However, there is a quest for world government, and it's difficult to understand at first glance that they get more power, they get more control from chaos. And that is part of the motivation of what's going on as we see protests flare up. Why were they really Western-backed? Just like the stuff in former Yugoslavia and other parts of the former Soviet Empire, all these color revolutions that have happened since the fall of the Soviet Empire throughout the 90s, and especially right now, really have all been Western-backed, globalist-backed, Bilderberg-backed, New World Order-backed. But it doesn't make sense. Why would they foster chaos? Why would they back dictators but then back their ousters? It's complicated, but it really amounts to order out of chaos. That is their creed, and through deception, they will accomplish this, and they will gain more power out of it. That's what we have to watch for. Of course, the big stories today are Kurt Nemo, Libyans, no thanks to globalist intervention. Even the rebel leaders in Libya do not want the U.S., NATO, and United Nations forces to come in under a humanitarian guise or any other guise. They want to deal with it themselves. I think that's fine. We see Oman protests do not halt oil production shipments. Shipments of refined crude from Oman's port of Sohar are continuing, a port spokesman said on Monday, after anti-government protests blocked roads leading to the key industrial area of Gulf oil producer. That is for now in Oman. We also have Saudi activists eye protests wait for new cabinet. Democracy activists in Saudi Arabia say the government is closely monitoring social media to nip in the bud any protest inspired by uprisings that swept Arab countries, toppling leaders in Egypt and Tunisia. Activists have set up Facebook pages calling for protest on March 11 and 20 with over 17,000 supporters combined, but police managed to stymie two attempts to stage protest in the Red Sea city of Jeddah last month, highlighting difficulties of such mobilization in the conservative kingdom. We have more on Oman. The protesters stage a third day of unrest. They set a supermarket ablaze, rallied at two places in the seaside town Monday, and a third consecutive day of unrest that has included deadly clashes in the strategic Gulf nation. Kuwait, a key opposition group, calls for Prime Minister ouster. A key Kuwaiti opposition group on Monday demanded the ouster of Prime Minister as youth activists called for a rally on March 8th to force the premier to quit. The first step toward reforms is forming a new government under a new prime minister that should be capable of running the country and reforming imbalances. And we see in Tunisia, first the president left, and now the interim president has named a new president, and the prime minister has also stepped down with a new prime minister already named. So everything is changing in the Middle East. But overall, we can see it clearly is a regional tactic to divide. And we're going to talk about that more with James Corbett, who's coming up after the break. And Alex Jones will be popping in as well as we continue to look at the Middle East, what's happening, and try to understand how they could divide and conquer.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, we are back on this Monday, February 28th, 2011. My name is Aaron Dykes. I'm filling in for Alex, who incidentally will be popping in later in the hour. But right now we go to James Corbett, who's an independent journalist who's been living and working in Japan since 2004. You may have seen his website, CorbettReport.com. He's been writing and producing the Corbett Report, an independent listener-supported alternative media and information source since 2007. His forthcoming book, Reportage, Essays on the New World Order, will be available for purchase in early 2011. And we're going to bring him up right now to get more into the Middle East and what's going on with the New World Order in general as he chronicles nearly all the same subjects we do and in great detail. James, are you there?
I am here, and thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, helping to drive the tip of the spear even further into the heart of the New World Order. And it's so important right now, as you know, as the globalists are upsetting the geopolitical grand chessboard so that they can put the pieces back on the board in their own favor.
Well, thanks, James. It's an honor for me to be here, too. I'm filling in for rather big shoes, but I'm doing the best I can. What do you think is most important right now in the Middle East as we see North Africa, the peninsula region, and really that whole area just west of Iraq all unfolding into crisis, and the looming question, will worldwide rise in unrest, culminate?
Well, it's a good question, and it's one that's absolutely vital for us to deal with right now, because although I've seen some great coverage of this in the alternative media that seems to be casting a skeptical eye to what's going on, unfortunately, I don't see that filtering down to a lot of the people that I see on a daily basis here. And it's unfortunate to me that there are so many people who are buying into this rather unquizzically, just that they're toppling dictators in the Middle East, so everything's going to be sunshine and rainbows and lollipops. But of course, we know that this is part of a much, much greater plan and an agenda that's unfolding right now. And it seems to me that, to take a Hansel and Gretel analogy, the globalist-controlled corporate and foundation-funded media loves to create these these houses of candy for us out in the woods because we're lost and starving, and we've come across this house made of candy. Oh, it looks so good. Let's go and eat it, and we'll stay in it. And this nice little old lady comes and invites us in, and of course she just wants to shove us into the oven and eat us. And that's, to me, is the analogy of what's going on here. Of course, they're going to create these wonderful looking events that are going to be all about peace and democracy, even as they're at the exact same time about bombing people, you know, in other countries, exact continuation of the neocon agenda. But most people on the left side of the false left-right paradigm won't really catch on to that. And it's unfortunate to me because it seems there is a geopolitical grand chessboard and it is being used to play this great game. And unfortunately, the public is trapped playing checkers while the globalists are playing chess. And if that's the case, I mean, we're going to lose every single time. But it seems to me there is an elephant in the room here, and it's a billion person elephant in the room, and it's called China. And I think that, to me, is what a lot of this is aimed at. And we can see it in country after country where this destabilization is happening, from Yemen to Egypt to Libya. And I've got some articles here that showcase what's going on pretty well. All news that's happening in very recent times that has to do with these countries and these dictators that are being toppled now. Of course, all of these dictators are being propped up by the U.S. and with U.S. aid, and have been in power because they have been serviceable puppets to the U.S. But the question is, have they been the greatest puppets, and can better puppets be installed? So if you take a look at the Jamestown Foundation, for example, they have an article, Burgeoning China-Yemen Ties Showcase Beijing's Middle East Strategy. And it talks about how Hu Jintao has just invited President Ali Abdullah Saleh over to China for an historic six-day summit to talk about expanding ties between China and Yemen. And it says here, China's stake in Yemen, however, goes far beyond the energy and trade spheres. Beijing is determined to strengthen its role as an emerging political and diplomatic player in the Middle East. Beijing's diplomatic and economic overtures to Yemen provide a glimpse into China's grand strategy in the region. And surprise, surprise, now Ali Abdullah Saleh is in trouble because people are trying to overthrow him. You go to Egypt, you have Mubarak, who of course was propped up with U.S. aid, the second largest recipient of U.S. aid, so was a U.S. serviceable puppet for the, not the Americans, of course, but the New World Order that controls the American government. And you go back to, you can even go to the State Information Service, sys.gov.eg, and you can get a report, Mubarak, China-Africa Partnership to Achieve Peace Development. And it talks about a conference that was happening in 2009. Mubarak hosted Hu Jintao and a Chinese delegation as they're talking about expanded Chinese-African cooperation. And then when you go to Libya, of course you're talking about oil. And it's not so much that the New World Order needs to control that oil for themselves. It's that they need to stop it from falling into the hands of the Chinese, because obviously China is the billion-person elephant in the room, and it's consuming oil at a great rate. So controlling China's oil reserves is an extremely important part of this game. So you can go to thestreet.com. They have an article from the 24th of February of this year, China oil company attacked in Libya. So you have these spontaneous protests of people who want to overthrow the dictator who are also attacking Chinese oil companies. So it seems to me in country after country, there seems to be a certain direction that these are heading in. And I'm not saying this is the only thing that this is about, but I think that there is some aspect of the geopolitical great game being played here.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of aspects, because you have China also trying to squelch their own protests right now. People trying to bring in, I guess, so-called democracy. But that's really the problem. It's brand democracy that we're trying to so-called export from our foreign policy. The Bush had rhetoric about it. Excuse me, the Bush administration had rhetoric about it. Obama's continuing that. And we see that through these NGOs that we know are on the playing field in the Mideast. And then we have all the revelations that Lindsey Williams brought to the program last year about how they want to stop the oil trade, let these prices go up. We've seen some skyrocketing already with the oil prices. But as you pointed out, it's really this geostrategic plan to hold out for the end game. We've got all this stuff in Alaska. We've got more energy there to last us probably for a millennia. But as you say, it's about challenging China's authority to that energy, even as we have all our own domestic problems with China and the debt.
Right, exactly. And to a certain extent, the whole Chinese thing is a smokescreen. I mean, we run the risk sometimes of being so close up to the painting that we're looking at each brush stroke as it happens so that we understand exactly how the painting is being painted. But we have to take a couple steps back to see the bigger picture and see what's actually being painted. And in this case as well, of course, the Chinese... American, I hate to even say American because, of course, it's the New World Order, the globalist control over the American government. But the tensions that are going on and the interplay is to a certain extent a smokescreen, because we know that the Chinese have been built up by the New World Order, the very same New World Order who have created the economic collapse, that have created the destabilizations throughout this region and throughout Europe as well. So it's all a smokescreen at a certain level, and we know that Rockefeller gave eulogies to Chairman Mao in the New York Times, saying it was a great experiment that, oh, by the way, just happened to kill 60 million of his own people conservatively. Or you have the Clintons back in the 90s, of course. Bill Clinton himself personally approving the transfer of advanced nuclear technologies to China. You have all sorts of ways in which the New World Order has been building up China, and now you have Soros going around saying China will be the engine of the New World Order, and he even uses that term. I mean, if people don't believe me, just Google it, just YouTube it. It is out there, Soros, New World Order. He's talking about China being the engine of the new system that they're working to bring about. And of course, it's Soros and Brzezinski and people like that who are behind these types of color revolutions. So it's all one big circle that unfortunately is drawing us further and further into the globalist grasp.
Sure, and you have back in the 70s with Kissinger and the Nixon era, all their diplomacy in China was just about triangulating China to kind of pivot off of Russia as they play for control in that region, in the subcontinent region of Asia and the Middle East area. Can you comment more on the actual grand chessboard and the whole arc of instability in that region? We know the things Brzezinski and Kissinger and others have talked about. Where does China fit in terms of playing that actual chess game?
Well, an excellent question, and I think there is the near term and the long term. I think what we're seeing is the beginnings of a quiet, at this stage it's quiet and behind the scenes, but the beginnings of a type of Cold War situation, where I think it's going to be about trying to gobble up and grasp control of the various oil reserves and mineral reserves, especially in Africa. I think the New World Order controlled American government has been looking for a toehold in Africa for a while now to try to keep the Chinese out, because there's a lot of resources, especially in the North African region where all this destabilization is happening right now, that China has been looking at and attempting to acquire over the past couple of decades to feed their growing industrial engine. So I think that's what this stage of the game is about right now. It's a very under the radar type of Cold War scenario that's shaping up. But I think the longer term, what we're seeing is in the similar way to the Cold War itself, which to a certain extent was smoke screens, because as we know, the globalists were controlling and funding both sides of that phony crisis as well, in order to perpetuate a system where A, there's a constant threat of outside intervention and force. Therefore, there has to be the perpetual military industrial complex. And then B, at a greater extent, when the Cold War really creates the Hegelian dialectic, where you have two forces playing off against each other, and the result is a synthesis between the two. So you see the Sovietization of America and the capitalization of the Soviet Union bloc, and that's the same thing they want to set up with China, I think.
All right, we have the music coming in, but we're going to get more into the geostrategic game that's going on in the Middle East and the other areas when we get back. Infowars.com. Okay, we are back on this Monday, February 28th, 2011 broadcast. My name is Aaron Dykes. I'm filling in for Alex, who will be back tomorrow, and he'll be on the show later in this hour. Right now, we're on with James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com. And before the break, James raised a very interesting point, paralleling this back to the Cold War. And I really think in many ways the Cold War was not only against the Soviet Union, but it was a classic dialectical excuse to invade all kinds of parts of the third world countries. You know, most of the countries in Latin America went through revolution, coups, or destabilizations in that Cold War period. Many, if not most, of the countries in Africa went through the same phase. Many of the countries in Asia, East Asia, all along the Arc of Crisis in particular, all suffered regime change and real pressure from both the West and the Soviet sphere during the Cold War. And this isn't the time to make the argument that the Soviets were propped up by the West and that they were kind of a paper tiger. But more than anything, it was an excuse to say, well, these are dictators in this part of the Latin American world. These are dictators in Africa, but they're pro-West, so that makes them democratic, and at least they're not communist. Or we have to invade this country, or the domino effect is going to take over, and we're going to see communism spread throughout the region. That kind of dialectic really gives an easy excuse for the U.S. and NATO, to go into these regions. And today, it's just as easy with the economic disaster, with the humanitarian crisis agenda. And so, James Corbett, what do you think about that? Can we flesh out some more of the Cold War parallels?
Well, exactly right. And it's important for people to understand that it's not just a dialectic. It's a completely false dialectic. It gives people a false choice. So it might lead some people to think that if I'm against the wave of protests and destabilization happening in the region, that means that I'm in favor of the dictators or something along those lines. Of course, that's not the case. But it makes everyone choose sides in a phony game that's rigged from the beginning, so that no matter which side you choose, that you're going to lose. And that's unfortunately the way they often set these types of things up, because they understand, unfortunately, that the majority of the public is playing checkers while they're playing chess. And when that's the case, I mean, we're just going to lose every single time. So we have to be a bit smarter about this and understand that when the people in the $3,000 suits being paid $50 million a year with their 10,000 watt smiles get on camera and tell you how wonderful everything in this region is, we know that they are being paid to say that because it's serves the interests of the people who are paying them. And it's a pretty simple point, but it's one that a lot of people don't seem to take into account. So this destabilization does help, unfortunately, the globalist interests that are really in the long term only interested in melding the entire thing into one united world government, which of course we know is the big end game of all of this. So again, it's not in our interest to concentrate too much on the individual things that are happening without taking into account the bigger picture. And I think that bigger picture is revealed in the institutional framework for world government, which is being set up all around us and is already so deeply underway that most people would be shocked if they really started to take a look into it. And that institutional framework is, of course, brought in through governmental organizations, the international governmental organizations that are governmental in all but name, from the IMF to the UN to the World Trade Organization. And it's represented in things like that story about the TSA with the genetic screening and the genetic pat-downs that, of course, relates back to the newborn babies getting their blood taken at birth for DNA databases, going into a Pentagon DNA database that Alex Jones has been talking about for 15 years. And the mainstream media is finally catching up to let people know about it. And they're a perfect example of a system that's being instituted across the world at the exact same time in country after country. And it's being done by secret agreement, handshakes done behind closed doors that the public never sees about, never hears about, and doesn't learn about until 30 years after it's already started.
Yeah, that's right. It's a coordinated continuity of agenda that was planned long ago, implemented from the top at the United Nations global level and implemented in the various countries. And it's very interesting to me that with the worldwide economic crisis, which was caused through globalism, through all these countries being sinewed together as if they were under the fascist emblem, and how this has spread. Now we have the price of food is at the heart of the wave of these revolutions. How will they use the economic crisis to cause further crisis? More on that when we get back with James Corbett. I'm Aaron Dykes. This is InfoWars.com. Monday, February 28, 2011 broadcast. I'm Aaron Dykes, filling in for Alex Jones. He should be coming on at the end of this segment. We have James Corbett of the Corbett Report for one more segment. A couple odds and ends here. I just want to mention that the last World War I veteran has died. Frank Buckles, the last U.S. World War I veteran, has died. A spokesman for the family said Sunday he was 110. Definitely a milestone, the last survivor of that globalist contrived war, which has led us into the paradigm of global government for the 20th and 21st century. Not only do we have protests throughout the Middle East, we have China uses whistles, water, and police on protesters. That's in the AP. We have Bernie Madoff tells New York Magazine government itself is a Ponzi scheme. And that brings us into how the globalists have used this economic crisis to fuel greater revolutions throughout the region that will only come back around on the U.S. and other Western nations, including the price of food and the price of oil. James Corbett, what are your takes on how they've used our worldwide economic crisis to fuel greater events?
Well, not just how they've used it, but how they've constructed it exactly. You can look back, of course, at the repealing of Glass-Steagall and how that created the derivatives bubble, which unfortunately now is just a mind-boggling number, whatever it is, however many quadrillion it is at this point. It's more than all of the assets in the world combined. So they have this giant derivatives bubble of a totally imaginary wealth that they've created out of nothing, which is now set to pop and deflate and be the final straw that breaks the back of the world economy. And again, this is something that has been envisioned and thought about for a long time. And again, I would direct people back to Carol Quigley and writing about how the secret agreements reached with the Bank of International Settlements and its various arms, the Central Bank of Central Banks, as it's referred to, and how it, through a series of secret agreements, will come to dominate the world system, a complete one-world system of economic control. And of course, now we see it during the economic destabilization, the IMF coming up and saying, oh, hey, well, we've got the world currency that can bring stability back to the stabilized world order. We can provide a new world order of a new world currency, exactly as people have been talking about in the alternative media for decades, and as unfortunately reality is just catching up to.
Yeah, and it's a real shame. There's really no doubt that they are building China to be the next global government engine as the U.S. winds down at the expense of the U.S., as the U.S. will be broken by these energy crises, as they absorb all the remaining independent forces of economic, as they take over everything. It's just really frightening. Your thoughts, Corbett?
Well, I agree with that assessment. It's unfortunate, but it's true. It's an analogy that I've heard before, that it's kind of like the elite globalists are these parasites that'll go and lay their eggs inside of a country and hatch and infest that country and use it as an engine for itself to go out and spread and propagate. And then once that host is a carcass, is a shell, is starting to decay, they'll just break out and fly over to some other new host and invade that. And that seems to be exactly what's going on. America was the engine for the New World Order system to move the ball further down the field, and now that America is being taken down by design, the Chinese model is being brought in. And of course, we know the Chinese model is all about mobile forced abortion vans and complete control and harvesting the organs of prisoners and all of this, which, surprisingly enough, they didn't talk about on Hu Jintao's recent state visit to America. No, they put up Chinese flags all down the in Washington, because he's just such a great, wonderful leader, just like Mao was, right?
But then going back to the Middle East, if this whole thing isn't globalist contrived, somebody sure propped up the dominoes in a very convenient fashion so that all this stuff would trigger itself to all come to the surface at the same time. Going back to Brzezinski and his plans for geopolitical domination of the grand chessboard, we have Tony Cartolucci wrote an article last week called The Path to Persia, which basically deals with a lot of the stuff Brzezinski has been planning for a couple years. Brzezinski and Defense Secretary Robert Gates wrote a paper in, I believe, the latter part of 2007, 2008, really dealing with how Iran would most likely not see a direct military intervention, but really they would kind of circumvent through a secondary route, really a lot of it dealing with these kind of popular uprisings, and it just matches perfectly with this color revolution tactic, the so-called Twitter protest, and they are happening in Iran, and we know Iran is the key piece on that area in the on the chessboard in terms of getting to that latter stage where China becomes superior and whatever happens to the U.S. happens. What do you think about the Brzezinski path to Persia?
Right. Well, it's important to understand that the Brzezinski method is not to attack your enemy directly, but to use the various pieces on the board to your advantage to get someone else to destabilize your enemy for you. And of course, that's exactly what the color revolutions are. And of course, there are all sorts of other underhanded ways in which war can be waged without being directly at war. And we see that, for example, with the Stuxnet worm that was created by American Israeli intelligence and used to destabilize the Iranian weapons program. So again, there's all sorts of things that are going on under the table and behind the scenes that are, of course, more important than what we're being fed through the palatable pap of the mainstream media.
And Stuxnet's a very interesting example because it's an admitted tool of war, albeit not directly violent. But the response to it is that we're supposed to have cybersecurity at home now, that they're going to clamp down on the internet and potentially curtail freedoms and direct access because of things like the Stuxnet, which we know are coming right out of foreign policy and the Defense Department. And as you mentioned, U.S.-Israeli intelligence, it's just amazing how they build one crisis upon another, and it's all set to react on this map. And the things happening in the Middle East are happening here at home, too, in whatever form. I don't know if it's going to be the way Farrakhan sees things, but it's already happening in Wisconsin and other parts.
It's so right, and it's so important for people to understand that these weapons that are being supposedly constructed to combat the enemies, which themselves are being propped up by the globalists, are always also directed at ourselves. I mean, that's the point of these types of crises and these types of weaponry and all the things that are being developed, is that whatever you see being used against your enemy, at some point, unfortunately, the globalist-controlled governments are going to try to use against themselves as well, because that's the way they construct these crises. So you see Stuxnet worm being used as a way to say, well, look, these types of things can be constructed, so now we have to create this overarching cybersecurity bill, which, oh, by the way, can let us have a kill switch over the internet. But it's bad when Egypt uses it. It's great if we have that option, though. So again, yes, absolutely. Every crisis is aimed outwards and inwards. It's like the TSA. Do they really need genetic screening of people coming into the country? No, they don't. But what is that about? It's about creating the genetic screening control grid based on these database technologies that, of course, is part of the eugenics program, which I know you're extremely well familiar with because I know some of the articles you've written about the eugenics agenda.
Yeah, the eugenics agenda seems to never end. It goes back more than a century, and we're just seeing neo-eugenics now. But, of course, that's a whole other topic. But, yeah, the DNA thing is very frightening at TSA, and we know it does fit into larger paradigms. Particularly to watch is Bill Gates Foundation and everything they're doing with these vaccines. But what else is on your radar right now, James Corbett? What else have you been reporting on recently?
Well, there's so much to report on, but even just touching on the Gates Foundation and the things they're doing with the vaccines and the way they're promoting this genetic screening technology and all of that, well, one way to look at that is through the paradigm of what the foundations are and how they came into existence and what they're really about. So I would urge people who have not done so to take a look at the work, the testimony of Norman Dodd, And G. Edward Griffin did such an important, such a landmark interview with him in the early 1980s that's now completely available for free viewing on the net, you know, through YouTube or whatever. And people, there, unfortunately, it's a travesty that so few people have watched it, but just startling testimony from this man who was on the head researcher for a congressional committee in the 1950s called the Reese Committee, which was looking into the tax-exempt foundations of the robber barons, the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and the Fords and the others, who had set up these foundations to use as an arm of control, even as they're hiding under the guise of philanthropy. And his testimony about what he found in the meeting minutes for the founding of the Carnegie Endowment in 1908, and what they were talking about and how they decided that the best way to manipulate society is to get America into a war. So then they started deliberating about what would be the best way to get America into a war. And then, of course, by 1917, they were involved in World War One. And again, it's just all part of this manipulation that's going on at a scale that few people would even begin to imagine unless they're really seeking out this information. But it is there and it is available. And people need to start using the tools that we have right now to arm themselves with the knowledge that we need to win.
Yeah, and it's amazing how deep this strategy does go. By the way, we have an interview exclusive for PrisonPlanet.tv with Charlotte Isherby, where she does talk about a lot of these Norman Dodd tax-free foundation hearings. But bottom line, our country is basically a farce. It was taken over long ago by these tax-exempt foundations, and be bad enough if they were operating independently, but they are clearly coordinated with the United Nations, which the Rockefeller family themselves helped set up. Then they have their own foundation and the other foundations that seem to do the work for them. They come up with these strategies, and then they globally implement them in a coordinated fashion, top down into these various countries. Particularly all throughout the West, you see things implemented in the U.S. at the same time as Britain, Australia, Canada, other parts of Europe, and we've been taken over by these foundations. What we think is our constitutional government has been completely thwarted, and until we as a larger nation wake up to that, we can't get our constitution back, because we think things are still going along hunky-dory, problems here and there, but really we were sold out a long time ago. James?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So people can look into things like the ID card issue and how the UN has had their conferences and come up with protocols to standardize ID cards throughout numerous countries. So a couple of years ago, everyone in America was talking about the real ID and what a terrible travesty that would be to come in to create this national ID database that would be another part of the control grid. Well, it's already in place and functioning in numerous countries, and we have this standardized ID that is really an international ID database that's just waiting to be actualized. It's already the protocols are already set up, the standards are in place, and country after country is implementing it, again quietly behind the scenes, international agreements that few people have any idea about. But there are researchers out there that are providing valuable information on that, and for example, I've talked to Nathan Allenby, a researcher in the UK, who wrote an excellent article about the way the ID cards are being brought in as an international on an international basis without people really understanding what this is really about.
Yeah, and look to Egypt. Look to India, where they're implementing the biometric thumbprinting and the other DNA-based stuff. And then you've got Gandhi. His whole revolution started being against thumbprinting, being against biometric and ID cards way back, you know, nearly 100 years ago. And yet this stuff is happening, and it's true. It's coordinated all the places you say. Anyway, we thank you for your time, James. We have Alex on the line, and we're going to go to him now. Really appreciate your insights as we try to figure out this Middle East and everything else that's going around the world. Thank you, James.
Thank you.
Do we have Alex now?
Yes, I'm here, Aaron. Do you hear me?
Hey, Alex. That was a great job on The View, really turning around the popular culture paradigm and trying to get people back to the real issues that are going on in the world. Tell us what happened from your point of view.
Well, absolutely. That was our plan from the beginning. I didn't know Charlie was going to go in that direction on the show. But Charlie, I know, is a calm, focused, loving guy. I just think he's rebelling against AA, trying to quit stuff on his own. But that's a whole other issue. You notice it's all over the news today that the TSA now wants to take DNA swabs out of your cheek to fly. This is the beta testing ground for total domestication of the population. It was in Bill Clinton's executive order back in the mid-1990s and covered in America Destroyed by Design. I was just talking to Judge Andrew Napolitano. I had lunch with him just now after I did a couple TV shows with you and another. And he was talking about it's incredible that all over Fox they're talking about, wow, Alex Jones is right about the babies in the blood and being put in the Pentagon database. Of course I was right. 15 years ago, I published secret documents given to me by a, let's just say, military nurse in San Antonio. Just like 3 years before it was mainstream news, we broke the clergy response team news information. And so we're having a major effect. The globalists are coming down on us with this Pentagon control grid. Aaron, am I coming through good to you from Times Square?
It sounds good to me, Alex. I'm not on the board, but as far as I know, the levels are great. I'm getting a thumbs up over there.
Okay, good. Continuing here, the Charlie Sheen situation basically blew up in my face. But I'm not somebody who takes something, you know, that's a curveball or a wild card, and you know, falls down crying about it. I've known Charlie for 6.5 years. Whenever I go out to L.A., I stay at his house. Been there many times. Sit there for a week straight before. No drugs, no alcohol, working out, only vices, coffee, and cigarettes. And so when he called me and said, help me stay straight, you know, help me fly out here, you know, so I came out, I hung out with him, and I said, listen, if you weren't with Bombshell McGee and all these women, there weren't Versace suitcases of cocaine, mainly with alcohol. The cocaine stuff was completely exaggerated. He admitted that it was long and that he wanted to basically change that. But he was told, well, I guess we're about to go to break.
We're not quite at break yet, Alex, but why don't you continue there?
All right, sorry, it's just so noisy out here. I thought I heard music. He was going to come on the air and talk about how he was clean, how he was straight, and talk about Obama not responding to his 9/11 questions. And right before the interview, he said, I want to get into all these other subjects. And I knew that once he got on air, especially towards the end, that it was going to be a serious controversy. And so what I've set out to do is basically when the mainstream media comes after me, or comes after Charlie Sheen now, I'm able to get on national TV and talk to the mind-numb sheep who only watch cable television or mainline broadcast and inject real ideas. That's why 4 days ago, Media Matters panicked on Thursday and said, attention media, Alex Jones says he's using this to inject anti-New World Order information. Well, that's absolutely right. To quote Charlie Sheen, winning, that's what we're doing here. And it's like judo. We're taking the situation and turning it back around against them. And I tried to get everything I could out on The View today. And now I'm going to be on several other big networks tonight, back on a plane this evening. Lord willing, back live tomorrow in studio for all the wonderful listeners out there. But certainly we're all about not being into celebrity. We're all about...
Alex, I don't know if you saw it, but Media Matters, 2 days before they blamed you for trying to take attention from this, were saying they demand they mention how you're a, quote, conspiracy theorist and how all this Sheen stuff goes back to the conspiracy stuff. They try to discredit everything, but good job trying to turn it around. We'll get more details from you right after this break. I am Aaron, in for Alex, and as you heard, he'll be back tomorrow. The websites are Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. Okay, we are back on this Monday, February 28th. Alex is waiting in the wings. He's been under a siege of media blitz. He's been on all kinds of stations, including The View, ABC's View, with more than 30 million viewers this morning. Alex, tell us what's happening with this media storm and the other issues you want to cover.
Well, I completely dominated all The View hosts, as you saw. I shut them down, dominated. I talked to the head producer. He said they'd never been shut down like that. But they have, like, instant rating numbers coming in. They said it was off the charts. They were super excited about it. And, of course, the crowd, the in-studio audience, love hearing about Building 7 being blown up and how the government did it. They love hearing about DSA attacking the American people and our slave training. They love, you know, hearing about George W. Bush being a war criminal. They love me going after Hasselhoff. Barbara Walters almost had a heart attack by the end of it. She was so mad. I thought she was going to have a heart attack. So certainly, again, no weapon formed against us shall prosper. I was completely blindsided by Charlie, but I know why Charlie's so upset. They keep putting out these vanity cards while he was away getting better, getting clean, saying, you know, he's dead inside. Chuck Lorre's going to outlive him. There's a whole bunch of these things. And it's basically, I think, a way to get him to quit, so not to pay him all these, you know, tens of millions of dollars that are coming out of the syndication. And so Charlie is somebody who's coming off addiction after years being clean. He's detoxing right now. He's very manic. And I know he interviewed 2020 and NBC. They did hours and hours of interviews, and he gets sick of being judged. And so he just basically makes a joke about it all. But, you know, he knows it's not good, and he's trying to change his life. But my issue on the show was, Charlie's been my friend, like a courage for 9/11 truth. I got him on the show to dispel rumors that weren't true. I got him on the show to talk about the fact that I'd seen him blood tested, urine tested, and he was clean. He's not done that. You know, for mainstream news, they've tested, he's totally clean. And then he kind of went off on a tangent on other issues because he'd had a fight with his ex-wife the night before. So this isn't even about Charlie Sheen or Alex Jones. It's about the information, and it's the greatest example I know of culture jamming, whereas they would just be talking about all this. Instead, they're hearing information about the New World Order, about 9/11. These are all these housewives and people. When we came in this morning and saw the line to go to The View, it was about 98% women. These are people who've never been exposed to these real issues who are now actually being exposed to it. So God is certainly turning this overall into a very serious blessing with us being able to reach out to so many people and awaken them to real issues. So we're very, very thankful because I was completely blindsided about what happened last Thursday because I never heard Charlie like that. But again, he's in a very fired up, manic phase. He's tired of apologizing to people. He's tired of being demonized. And you know, here's a guy turning down what could potentially be about $100 million of syndication next season as well, just in his boss's face. But when I got on the airplane to fly here Sunday to New York City, few people knew who I was on the plane, but other people were going, winning, like a professional football player in front of me. The head of one of the biggest banks in the country was there. I had like a three-hour argument with him about the New World Order as we were flying to New York. And so the point is, it's kind of like Chuck Norris facts. Chuck Norris, when he does a push-up, he doesn't move, the earth does. Now there's all these Charlie Sheen-type Chuck Norris-isms tied into the whole anti-New World Order movement. And so what Charlie did was he took people's criticism of drugs and alcohol, people's criticism, you know, claiming he's a warlock Easter Bunny who works for Toucan Sam. He made a joke out of that. He took all of that and threw it right back in people's faces. And I apologize for some of it. It was shocking. It was shocking for me as well. But again, in the end, it's turning towards something good. And that's what's exciting about all this. As the whole world melts down in the world government, as the DNA testing...
We'll be right back, Alex. We're hitting that break, and we're going to be on the other side. Infowars.com.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Okay, we do have Alex right here. I'm Aaron Dyke sitting in, and we're going to finish up with Alex, what he saw on The View this morning and everything else. I've got at least a few reports. We've seen some blogs trying to attack you and Charlie, Alex, but the comments themselves are almost exclusively positive, defending Alex Jones' InfoWars. So hopefully this was an important impact.
I mean, it's the same thing with Hollywood Reporter and all these other big publications that attacked me and lied about me and, you know, did all these things. That almost every comment is for us. So, again, this is culture jamming, inserting into mindless celebrity fluff. And Charlie's even said that privately. Real issues. I didn't know the day he was going on that he was going to throw the gauntlet down in front of his bosses or was going to be that over the top. But he did it for a reason because he's basically on a mission declaring war on these people. And I just hope that everything gets worked out between them. But regardless, you know, we are here now having, again, another major effect, breaking into the Matrix brainwashing transmission with real information. Where would you hear about Building 7 being an inside job?
Apparently Rumsfeld himself hasn't even heard about that.
Yeah, exactly. Where would you hear about $23.7 trillion missing from the that the foreign banks had stolen, the private Federal Reserve? Where would you hear about a million dead Iraqis? Where would you hear about the TSA putting their hands on people's pants? I mean, I jammed it in there to an audience who would never hear about that. I've got a couple other big national TV interviews coming up where I'm going to do the same thing. Unfortunately, they're taped, they're not live, but I'll do my best to just basically cover nothing but, you know, anti-New World Order information and break in on this transmission. I had no intention for any of this to happen. I thought Charlie was going on about, you know, being clean and talking about the New World Order. But, you know, the bottom line is people love Judge Charlie, who's certainly no, you know, angel. But 35 years of him being a big star, they only focus in on the lapses he's had and the problems he's had. I know him as a good guy. That's my friend. I had him on. He did an extreme interview I wasn't expecting. And I can't, you know, make apologies for that. But bottom line, we've had a huge effect. The first Media Matters, you know, 4 or 5 days ago says, how dare the media not point out he's a conspiracy theorist. Then I start going on the air talking about real issues, and they say, oh, my gosh, media, don't have him on, don't have him on. In fact, I was going to go on Oberman, whoever the new guy is that does the show. I was going to go on that slot on MSNBC, and Media Matters made phone calls and killed that. I've separately, while I've been here, had Glenn Beck doing his normal blocking me from getting on Fox, which is fine. I could care less. So it's just a continued circus as they continue to attempt to keep me off of the air. But they can't stop the signal. They can't stop our radio listeners. They can't stop all the great info warriors. And we are change people out there that are taking action like yourself, Aaron. So I just salute everybody out there who's been battling the globalists. And Lord willing, I'll be back in studio live tomorrow. Coming up, Catherine Ross, Fed's key intel on what's happening on the economy. We'll continue to stay focused on the issues here from the heart of the beast, New World Order capital, New York City, New York.
That's right, Alex. And as far as Sheen himself, he's always been controversial. He's always had a microscope on his life. But he boldly came out for 9/11 5 years ago, and he knew they were going to attack him. They've been waiting to attack him. They've threatened him on air, and he did it anyway. And,
yeah, it'll be six years in April. Of course, I was talking to him before that. Look, the point is, he's my friend. He's not perfect, and he's certainly come off a bunch of, you know, drugs and alcohol. Was in a pretty wild, manic mode right now, you know, quitting everything cold turkey. But again, bottom line, we're turning this situation into a blessing to get the word out. We couldn't do it without you, Aaron, and the entire crew. I'm going to let you wrap up this segment and just say great job to the crew and all of our AM&F affiliate sponsors. Everybody, Alex Jones signing off from New York City, Times Square. We are in the face of the beast. The answer to 1984 is 1776.
We thank you, Alex, and we wish you safe journeys back. Hopefully you'll be in tomorrow, Lord willing, as you say. And we covered a lot of key intel. We don't have all the answers, but we do know they're trying to destabilize the Mideast region. We know they have their sights set on the U.S. economy. We try to break it down when we come back, and The View. Catherine Austin Fitz coming up, and Mideast breakdown in the replay. This is Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv. I'm Aaron Dyke sitting in. Don't forget to visit the websites. We'll be back tomorrow.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Decapitalizing housing, that's the latest headline at Solari.com. We're joined for the next 52 minutes, and we will take your calls on any issue you want to discuss. Catherine is obviously widely read and very informed about the globalist eugenics takeover. Catherine Austin Fitz is our guest, founder and managing member of Solari Investment Advisory Services, LLC, president of the Hamilton Securities Group Investment Bank and financial software developer, assistant secretary of housing, Federal Housing Commissioner Bush 1, managing director and member of the board of Wall Street firm Dillon Reed & Co. These are the most elite firms out there. Catherine has designed and closed more than $25 billion of transactions and investments to date and has led portfolio strategy on $300 billion of financial assets and liabilities. Solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I.com is the website. Our websites are Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, and PrisonPlanet.tv. And Catherine is here to talk about everything she talked about coming true, the acceleration of dollar devaluation, the Chinese calling for the end of it, the G20 headed up by the French calling for it, housing numbers continuing to plunge, the real state of the economy with a true financial genius, and then we'll get into a bunch of other issues with her, the unfolding police state, the open calls for internet kill switches, while they attack Egypt for their shutdown, while praising a shutdown of the web here. We're really getting deeper down the road into the New World Order. Catherine, great to have you on with us.
And you forgot to mention one of my credentials.
What is that?
Member in good standing of the Alex Jones fan club.
Oh, boy.
Oh, it's so great to be back. I just love your show, Alex. I just love you. So it's always a pleasure. Now, things are accelerating. We have really reached a tipping point. You know, for years, Alex, we had a bubble where we just printed more and more paper and more and more print paper. And, you know, you and so many really great people tried to warn us about, you know, we can't just keep printing paper like this. Well, now we've come into the end game. And now I'm doing a Salieri Report tonight, which is my sort of briefings for subscribers. And my theme tonight is going to be global debt for equity swap. And let me explain what I mean by that. When you print this paper, really what you're printing is bonds, and it's the bond market that's ballooned. We've had a long-term bull market, the bond market, and now we're sitting here with all these bonds, and it's not like we've created more real things. You know, so there's the same amount of land and the same amount of gold, and, you know, there's some more people. And now we've got all this paper, and it's sitting in the bond market, and it's kind of eyeing the equity market and tangibles and the precious metals and saying, uh-oh, maybe we have to get out of paper into real things. How are we going to do that? And that's the shift, because when you get out of the bubble, the next thing that happens is everybody's got to get out of debt and get into equity. And that's the process you're seeing accelerate. And it's really, you know, some days it's just, I know, because you're watching the news every day. You come to your website, and there's more news than the Wall Street Journal these days. And it's accelerating, and it's kind of dizzying. We had a perfect example is we've had the Germans basically take over the New York Stock Exchange, and there's almost no discussion in the mainstream media and in Congress.
That was the first big issue, but I want you to put it in layman's terms, what these consolidations of the stock exchanges mean.
Well, what's happening is, if you look at how we're integrating global trading, there's tremendous redundancy in the exchanges. And there's also pressure to centralize control. And, you know, so that's clearly happening. Now, what exactly is driving the merger with the Germans at this time? That's a big question mark. I'm not clear. But make no mistake about it. What you're talking is basically the Germans controlling our biggest stock exchange. I mean, we're talking about deleting sovereign government here. We're talking about literally the Germans in control. Now, it's important to point out that the critical issue here is going to be who controls the systems. Because if Lockheed and DynCorp are still controlling and operating the systems, there's really not as much of a change of control as it looks like.
And then meanwhile, that little friendly, nice guy named John Stewart, that's not his real name, his brother runs the New York Stock Exchange, and we've got the communist Chinese owning the majority of the debt. Next, the private Federal Reserve that's international. Now the Germans coming in and taking over the stock exchange with almost no news. And this unifies the fraud, so the inside players are able to engage in fraud and not get caught. Correct me if I'm wrong, but studying this as a layman, the manipulation of stock markets gets exposed by other stock markets that are connected to it, but if they get it all under one house, then the sky's the limit.
Right. This guy, well, pretty much the sky is the limit now anyway, because the game has so pushed beyond the regulators' ability, both intellectually and politically, to deal with it, that what we've seen, Alex, is we saw over the last 15 years with the bubble, tremendous fraud. I've talked a lot about the mortgage fraud, which I'm more familiar with, and the securities fraud or the equities fraud. But we've seen tremendous fraud both in the mortgage market, the securities market, the bond market. The result of that fraud was the people who did it got refinanced out with the bailouts, You know, so not only did they engineer the fraud, but they got refinanced out in total, and the fraud was a huge success. That's why I call it a financial coup d'etat. And the reality is, you know, from their point of view, it was simply a takeover. And it was a successful financial coup d'etat. And there's literally been no indictments or no prosecution. And the message is clear. It was a fundamental reengineering as opposed to incompetence or what they think of as criminal behavior.
Yeah, this has all been methodically set up and prepared. Goldman Sachs and others got their regulators in over Ireland, the U.S., places like New Zealand, everywhere. They ran the same scam, and now they openly admit, yes, we're going to slowly kill the dollar. Yes, we're going to have the SDR as the new currency. Yes, you're going to pay carbon taxes and all of this to private banks. So the Ponzi scheme operators are now openly setting up world government run by them, holding our countries hostage to the derivatives debt that we don't owe, that they've created. And Bernie Madoff from prison comes out and says the banks had to know on Monday what he was doing. And of course they knew. He was just a mid-level player. So let's go through the global government, what it looks like, who the players are, and then what's happening currently as they bring in the austerity and lie to people and say, cut the paychecks, get rid of the teachers, raise the taxes, steal more of the pension funds, and that'll fix the debt, when they never even address the $1.5 quadrillion so that we could pay all of our money in taxes, get rid of all of the services, and still it wouldn't even put a dent in the $1.5 quadrillion. So they're scapegoating Wisconsins and the Irish and others right now.
Well, but let's break it down, because if you look at how much money's been siphoned off, when they say there's no money, you know, question number one is, well, where did the trillions that have disappeared, including illegally, go to? So question number one, when you say that there's no money, well, you know, it's like saying there's no milk in the milk bucket when there's a hole in the bottom. Where's it been running out to? So the money went somewhere, and that's question mark number one. But question mark number two is, we've known for 50 years that we were running the United States population on an unsustainable basis. Now, during that 50 years, we've produced trillions of dollars of retirement savings, and that's part of the money that sort of disappeared down the hole. But the reality is everybody in America has known that this is not a sustainable system. We've all avoided it. It's not just the elites, but we've avoided it too. One of the reasons the politics have worked the way they've worked, Alex, is because we've said, give us more money, we don't want to change. And every year we've been able to do that in the governmental mechanism.
But that's like a bass biting down on a purple worm. I mean, we're certainly the ignorant fish that's biting into the hook, but I'm talking about where that hook...
We're not ignorant, Alex. I mean, the way you get power over, you know, to solve a problem, you need power. The way you get power is you take responsibility.
I agree.
And the reality is, you know, let's look at the money. Whatever the American government is doing, every one of us is financing it by paying our taxes. Okay?
Yes.
Every one of us is financing it by putting money in pension funds and not having a position on where it goes. Every one of us is donating money, including tithing to churches who are supporting and going along with all of this. Every one of us is shopping or banking at the banks and the stores that are doing that, okay? If you look at how our money works, household by household, county by county, we have the power to say, you know something, we're not going to finance this anymore. If you, my church, wants, you know, my tithe every month, then you've got to change, you know, what you're doing and how you're doing it. I'm not just going to pay taxes to a government that's running drugs. I'm going to go get a lawyer, and we're going to battle this out in court, or we're going to organize locally and do a local escrow over tax money, as long as you're running the government on an illegal basis and trillions are going out the back door. So, in other words, we're all participating in this, and we're all complicit in it, and it's by seeing that we see the opportunities to start to really make serious change.
Well, Catherine, I agree with you that we need to look in the mirror if we want to see the main... you know, culprit, but at the same time, I'm talking about the brains that are actually implementing the scam. I mean, what you're talking about is what black folks for 50 years have talked about, that if they just spent their money in their neighborhoods, they would become wealthy, but they never do that. So I understand they are part to blame. I am part to blame. But I'm also talking about the overall economic system that designs it, where it's so easy to be defrauded, and it's so easy for the general public to be ignorant. I mean, you know what's happening. I know what's happening. But still, the general public doesn't. They're starting to wake up. Let's come back and break it all down with Catherine Austin Fitz. Austin Fitz is our guest, financial expert extraordinaire. Catherine, I mean, we know what they're doing. We know what the problem is. But summing it up, what is the end game of these people if we don't stop them? I mean, it's just unlimited the amount of theft they're engaging in, their destruction of the economy by design, and they offer the solution being given them more power, then things get worse, and the solution is give them more power. You talked about government drug dealing. I mean, it's in Bloomberg. It's in Bloomberg that $367 billion in one major U.S. bank alone of drug money, and it turns out they're running the aircraft.
Right. I think it's pretty simple. You have a small group of people who have been in control of governance on planet Earth, and they're looking at the growth of population, and they're saying, we need a plan to be in environmental harmony, and we need a way to integrate new technology, because the growth, you know, the new technology and discoveries in technology are accelerating that make it much harder to stay in control. And so I think what they're saying is we need a much smaller population, a population that can be will be much easier to control, and will leave us in control, but also will bring the planet back into environmental harmony, because living in the current lifestyle on the planet we're doing is, you know, it's just not environmentally in harmony the way it's being done now. So the question for them is, how do we get to environmental harmony and stay in control and be able to integrate new technology without losing control? And the reality is they want a much greater centralization, and they want a much smaller population. And I think all the different things we're watching are not, you know, we have to be careful not to compare what's happening to the official myth of what's supposed to be happening. And we have to step back and look at what's happening and say, okay, well, this is really happening. It's a little bit like, you remember that line in Rosemary's Baby when she's being raped by the, you know, demonic figure, and she says, oh, this is really happening. Well, you know, step one is we have to get out of denial and say this is really happening. You know, things are very different. We have an official story of what's supposed to be happening. We need to let go of that and start looking what's really going on. And the reality is we literally have a group of people, Alex, who has now gotten a hold of much more advanced technology, not only that you know, that it is adopted generally, but is beyond what we know exists. And they literally have become, and this is Richard Dolan's expression, a breakaway civilization. They no longer consider themselves of the same species as us. And they never, you know, they no longer consider themselves subject to the same laws and rules that we're subject to.
And by the way, the globalists all write books and make statements about this. I cover it in my film Endgame. They believe we're animals. It's social Darwinism, and it's their right to dumb us down, get us in control grids, and then kill us. And then I'm here warning the general public. A lot of them are listening. Others make jokes. And the globalists say, see, they want us to kill them. They deserve it.
Well, there's no doubt there's a cycle of disrespect between the general population and the people who are governing. And one of the reasons that there is, Alex, is because, and I speak as somebody who, at a very minor, lower level, has been part of that group. You know, when you try and govern, when you try and build a consensus for turning an aircraft carrier and turning it in time, it is such a frustrating experience that at some point you give up. You give up trying to have an intelligent conversation with the general population, and you just decide to manipulate. And you decide to manipulate because you've got to turn the aircraft carrier in time, And essentially what you learn is eventually, you know, the crowd will always do what makes the crowd the most money. There was a really brilliant comment in an interview that Julian Assange did with Time magazine about a month or two ago, in which he said, you know, political change in America doesn't result in change, and that's because America's been fiscalized. And what he meant by that is if you drill down and look at every household in America and where their income comes from and every county level, you know, sort of municipal infrastructure and where their income comes from up to the state, the federal government is the primary source of income at this point. I mean, we're much more socialized financially than the Soviet Union was before it fell. And literally, the dependency on the federal till is so enormous that even when you get political change, you don't get change because everybody's on the dole. And that's why I keep coming back to the money and dealing with the money, because unless we shift the money, we're going to sit financially dependent on the very people who are trying to kill us.
All right, I want to talk to you as a former insider about how you see them rolling this out. Then I want to talk about some solutions. I want to get into your latest article on your website dealing with the finances being cut off. And then phone calls, folks. Your phone calls coming up. Stay with us. Catherine Austin Fitz, always informative, from Solari.com. Then we're going to go to your phone calls, Nate, Jeff, Corbin, Michael, and George. I'll at least get to those calls. I know they'll be all over the map, but Catherine's got full spectrum analysis abilities, and so we'll love to hear from her on your questions or your quick comments. But please have your questions and comments ready, because I want to be able to get to everybody. Before we go back to Catherine, I want to tell you about eFoodsDirect.com. That's the letter E, foodsdirect.com. Super high quality, grown right here in America, non-GMO, non-hybrid food, biggest outfit in the nation, where I've got my storable foods. I did it by trial and error and found these folks, and they're a great sponsor, and I believe everybody should have food, water, firearms as an emergency backup going into these insane times. Look at what's happening around the world. Never stand in a bread line if you have your own bread. eFoodsDirect.com or 800-409-5633. 800-409-5633. eFoodsDirect.com. Also, I want to tell you about Safe Castle LLC. You can check them out at www.prepared.pro. That's prepared.pro, spelled out PREPARED.pro. These folks have been in the readiness business for almost 10 years. Well, they've been a sponsor for about a year, so it is 10 years. They are in the business of selling steel-plated peace of mind. They sell everything you need to be more ready for what's coming down the pike. An incredible website. Check it out. Survival gear, supplies, even steel-plated underground shelters and safe rooms and systems to safely bury your guns. Tell them I sent you. Again, that's prepared.pro for professional crisis preparedness needs. Prepared Pro. It's prepared.pro today. And don't forget the online video bookstore shopping carts at InfoWars.com. Your purchase of books, videos, T-shirts, funds, this operation. We're not funded by the globalists. We're funded by your support. Also, please support our local AM and FM affiliates by spreading the word about them and supporting their local sponsors or sponsoring the show in your area. Okay, going back to Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, you got this new article up on Solari that just came out today with some very important information, decapitalizing housing. What do we see in the markets that you talk about things reaching a tipping point or V2, point of no return?
I talked, Alex, when we first started about this shift between bonds and equities. And one of the things that means, given the pressure on the bond market, sort of the end of the bull bond market, is now financing the things we financed with fixed income is now going to shift, and it's going to be much more expensive. And what that means is mortgage financing is going to be much harder to get. It's going to be more expensive, tougher terms and conditions. Now, that's part of policy, a policy determination by, as you would call, the globalists. But it's one that would have to happen anyway because of the amount of paper that we've printed and the sort of the day of reckoning being here. So this is very tough news on the housing market. At the same time, we see the federal government, and part and parcel of that is interest rates starting to creep up. and the risk that they could go up even much higher. But we see the federal government announcing that they're going to basically liquidate, shut down, or end Fannie and Freddie in some way. So that means tremendous subsidy that's been flowing in keeping the housing market going, cut off, and in the decapitalizing housing. I just list a whole lot of other things.
So the other shoe is beginning to drop.
The other shoe is beginning to drop. And believe it or not, one of the biggest shoes is not direct on housing. It's that everybody who's living in housing is experiencing rising expenses and falling income. It's what I call the slow burn. But I was up in Philadelphia for a couple months at the end of the year, and I had one person, very, you know, tiny, lovely little row house. Their utility bill last year was $200 a month. This year is $800 a month. They're choking. And you know, during all the blizzards, you heard that from all over the country. So that means the cost of maintaining, repairing, heating a home is skyrocketing.
And the head of the Energy Department said last week they're going to shut down at least 500 power plants. China's building 3 to 5 a week. We can't build new ones. And they're literally saying they're going to bankrupt the coal industry. Whether you like coal or not, that's more than half of our energy. I mean, this is economic warfare, a post-industrial world.
Well, what this means is a tremendous amount of the growth. Most Americans have always thought of their home as an investment. We're going into a world where your home is not an investment. It's a consumption good. You know, it's a consumption good, just like, buying a car, okay, buying a dress, okay? So it's now a consumption good, and a lot of the growth in the value of homes has come from the debasement of the currency and from larger homes. So we've had a massive infusion of federal credit to make mortgage financing cheaper, more accessible, and that's financed everybody having more and more space. Now it's going to reverse and go the other way. And so whether it's the expense part of maintaining and owning a home or the financing or simply the size, what we're going to see is smaller and smaller homes driven by people's, it's going to look like people's preferences. So we're going to see a rear reversal of where we've been, and that has a very important strategy or implications to the strategies of most households on what kind of home they're going to have, where they're going to have it, what they're going to pay for it, and how they're going to finance it.
I'll tell you what's incredible, and I want to get your inside baseball take on this, working at the highest levels of government. 2 weeks ago, the White House, about 28 hours, 30 hours after we wrote a report that it was energy policies causing a lot of the blackouts because of increased consumption and not having enough power. And the Texas Reliability Energy Commission agreed with us. Heritage agreed with us in their analysis. The White House actually responded on their front page and said that we were liars. But then the next day, the energy secretary comes out and says, we're going to shut down a lot of the plants. I mean, it's incredible. Why would the White House respond to us? Are we hitting pretty close to the bone?
They're not concerned with libel law. Yeah, no, I think there's real sensitivity here, and they're, you know, essentially there's tremendous effort being put into keeping the official story going, but the official story is wearing thin, and so I think there's real sensitivity on these issues. Now, what we need is we need for everybody in America to realize, look, you know, you've got to be on one side or the other. Most Americans think that they can stay in the middle of the road, and that's the workable strategy. The reality is, you know, there is no middle of the road anymore. If you look at what's going on, and I just spent a half an hour with a naturopath yesterday going through the details of what is in the chemtrails and what that does to your body and what you have to do to try and mitigate it. It's the most, you know, it's, I don't know if you've ever done a show on Morgellons disease, but if you really get down and look at what is being sprayed overhead by the government and you really face that, you know, it's a real day of reckoning, Alex, because you have to say, well, why am I financing this? Because every one of us, with our money, whether it's where we bank or how we pay our tax, we're financing this.
Yeah, we've gotten so snuggled in with accepting being abused that they can come out and admit they're radiating kids, radiating TSA, shooting people up with syphilis in Guatemala, UN caught giving kids live polio constantly in the news. And it's just, oh, they're killing us for our own good. Let's love the government. I mean, the people running things are literally,
See, I don't think people, you know, my personal experience with most Americans is they're scared. They're scared, and the control is so complete, including through their household income, that they don't see a pathway to do something about it. And that's why it's so, so important that we be free to talk about it, which is why I'm a member in good standing of the Alex Jones fan club, because, you know, you're leading the conversation. And I think part of it is getting a critical mass of people to face, you know, this is really happening. This is really going on. And we have the power to do something about it, but we have to be prepared to talk about it. We have to be prepared to face it. And the reality is, Alex, we have to be prepared to face our own financial and operational complicity. I mean, we've watched drugs coming into our neighborhood targeted our kids for 50 years. And you know, we've let it go on. And let's face it, a lot of households in our community are financially dependent on killing our own kids. You know, and so...
Well, that was my next point. I mean, I'm sure you saw Bloomberg and AP a few months ago, where one of the biggest banks in the country... Wachovia admittedly had $360+ billion in just a 3-year period of drug money and owned the planes delivering it around. I mean, what more do we need? I mean,
well, what we need is we need a financially practical pathway out of the dependency on all this stuff. And now it's very interesting. When I realized how bad things were in 1998, I said, you know, I have to come clean. I have to get financially, I have to withdraw and stop making money from the system. And so I've tried as much as possible to withdraw. So as you, so as many others. We need thousands and thousands of people to realize, you know, we don't have to go along. Another world is possible. Let's start to shift our money, shift our time, shift our attention, put as many degrees of separation between you and the people who are trying to kill you.
And let me throw a quick example out on this and get your take, and we'll go to the phone calls. If you go back 12, 13 years ago or so, no matter where you lived in the country, it was almost impossible to find truly organic food. But as people began to purchase it, it built a market for it.
Right.
And so now you've got as much choice with organic as you do with the horrible poison stuff. But the system comes in then to change the rules where they don't have to list that salmon is a cross-species chimera clone. Or where they don't have to tell you that some grapes are really GMO. And I see that same thing now in Wisconsin where they're saying, you know what, we're going to take even more money out of your paycheck and put it in a pension, and it'll run right down out of the hole into the ground. They'll never get. So I see them moving to seize everybody's paychecks. Homeland Security's announcing they will control the paychecks. Everything will be wired through them. You'll have to have a Homeland Security check on your deal to be able to have a job. This is already happening, so they know that people are going to figure out the emergency exit. They're now moving to try to block them. They know we could see with the financial system people withdrawing like they did from GMO, and so they're trying to block those exits.
Right, but let me give you an example, because ultimately I think they're going to fail. What you're watching are desperate measures by desperate people. They're scared. And you wouldn't be seeing the kind of things we're seeing if they weren't. Now, I'm not, I don't underestimate the resources that they have, because you're literally looking at a group of people that have incredible technology and have essentially stolen and now control all the assets on the planet. So I'm not saying that they're not incredibly, incredibly financially powerful and they don't have whiz bang technology. But the reality is it takes, you know, traditionally, to run a civilization, it takes an organizing principle, and it takes what the Chinese refer to as the mandate of heaven. And these folks clearly, you know, they don't have that. And if anything, the thing that's going to destroy them is they're going to kill each other, because they're not grounded in a higher, you know, positive organizing principle. So ultimately, I just don't think it's going to work.
So all that evil men and tyrants need to flourish is that good men and women do nothing. We have to put out our organizing principle versus theirs, and we're going to beat them if we stand up and take action. Incredible, Catherine Austin Fitz. Let's go to some phone calls. Nate in Pennsylvania, thanks for holding her on the air.
Hey, Alex and Catherine. Nice to talk to you this afternoon. Glad to hear that the fight continues, and just wanted to say that the effect you guys are having is immense. Personally taken Catherine's advice to stop giving them your data. really, just every time she's on, it brings a ray of hope into my life. So just wanted to thank her for that. But, Alex, I don't know if today, did you happen to hear about the Dr. Oz show today?
No.
Dr. Oz actually had the interview with you and Dr. Wakefield on his show today. He had a clip of it.
What did he do?
Well, it was about the cause of autism. And I sat down, and I just couldn't believe it. Here's Dr. Oz having a wonderful discussion with the audience and a panel of doctors. And for all intents and purposes, it's coming out.
I want to say this about Dr. Oz. And again, I watch Glenn Beck maybe once a month. I watch Dr. Oz maybe once a month. I'm busy. But I saw a piece when he had Mr. Smith on. What's his first name? He's the expert on GMOs. I've interviewed
Jeffrey
him.
Jeffrey Smith.
Yeah, Jeffrey Smith. He had him on and let him lay out the facts of GMO killing people. I mean, that shows how far we've come, that Beck has to talk about the New World Order and that Oz can now talk bad about GMO on national TV. And you're saying a pretty fair piece and playing a clip for my show. Whoa, that's amazing.
Yeah, I was floored. I mean, it said at the top of the screen, courtesy Infowars.com, and I was thinking, oh my goodness. I mean, you just got tons of airtime on there. So I'm just thinking, I'm hoping those people go and check it out. But the discussion, the audience, I mean, everybody was just involved, and I hope you get a chance to see it.
Well, listen, I got to jump, but I appreciate that call, Nate. How exciting is that? That we're seeing things like that, Catherine.
Well, what it means is they have to protect their channel. In other words, what you're watching is the mainstream will blank it out until they're forced to.
It's self-interest again.
Right. Well, what's happening is they're losing market share. So they'll shift when they absolutely have to, and when they think they have enough control. I mean, I think they think with the food safety bill and the new USDA regulations, you know, that they have to shift this way, and they need to kind of process the grief through the mainstream to get the channel. But, you know, it's good that it's moving, but it's still not, you know, you still have to shift the money.
Yeah,
you still
interesting.
Have to shift the money. It's not enough to shift the conversation. You have to shift the money, too.
But it starts first with the conversation.
Absolutely.
To use another Chinese proverb,
absolutely.
The journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. And you're taking us a lot of steps here, Catherine. Jeff in Iowa, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I would like to get both your takes on a defensive and an offensive economic strategy against the globalists. One defensive, let's pick a few regions or areas that have enough libertarianism and enough subsistence farming and hunting, along with a cosmopolitan city-type environment to sustain us through the crash that's coming, say, Austin or New Hampshire, maybe the foothills of California, and put our money in there locally so we can survive with subsistence farming.
Well, there are already a lot of communities like that, and my job is just to generally try to wake people up and let them know what's happening. But yes, these moves, even if it's you and 20 friends that move into a general area and promise to support each other, or you and your friends move outside the city, I've now done that. I mean, I'm now doing what Catherine challenged me to do 2 years ago on air. Catherine?
Well, I think it is a great idea. We encourage people to do circles. But anytime you can get together with like-minded people in your area, or even by phone, by network, and start to talk about how you can shift your money to finance the strategic resources you need, whether it's energy or food, it's a wonderful thing to do. Because the reality is the way to have a resource is to finance it, and, you know, or
absolutely.
To control it.
Jeff, that's a great idea. What's the other one?
Yeah, the offensive one, nonviolent siege of Bilderberg. Shut it down.
I agree. Bilderberg coming up in a few months. There should be 1 million people there, not 500. But we've gone from none to 500, so let's do it. It's up to you. Your listeners still got the resources. Identify the globalists. We'll be right back. More calls right ahead. Okay, let's go ahead and talk to Corbin in Georgia. You're on the air with Catherine Austin Fitz. Go ahead.
How you doing, Alex?
Good.
I was just calling, you know, just want to congratulate you for all you're doing. And my second thing is, I'm only 21, and I've been, you know, following all the corruption, you know, ever since I was really born. And, like, I believe in destiny, and I was born on February 6th, the same day as Bob Marley and Adam Foschop. Do you know who that is?
I think so.
Yeah, he's the creator of the Illuminati. And my whole point behind that is that I think I was born to, you know, expose some of this stuff, too. And my whole thing is, I want to, you know...
Yeah, I thought you said Adam Weishaupt, but it didn't sound quite like it. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's German, so I know it's...
Really, yeah, Ingolstadt University. Real quick, do you have a question or comment for... I wish we had more time.
Yeah, my thing is, I just want to... you know, I've been riding around Atlanta, and they have... you know, cameras all over they took our street lights down to install cameras, you know, every few hundred feet from each other. But my whole point is, I want to ask, why haven't we started a march or something yet?
I appreciate your call. Well, I mean, we're all atomized. It's hard to get together. We are starting a march in our own daily lives, making decisions with the way we spend money that will bring down the globalists. Catherine?
One of my favorite books that I've read in the last year is a book called Prophetic Imagination by a guy named Walter Brueggemann, and he talks, Alex, about how the way Moses brought down the empire was to leave it in first and foremost in his mind and imagination, to just persuade people that they don't have to go along and that they can withdraw. And I think it's the same here. We need to say goodbye to the system and proceed to make other plans on our own.
So come out of her. Come out of Babylon.
Yeah, just you know, and before you can leave a place, you need to leave it in your mind, and then you need to leave it in your pocketbook, and you need to find other people who want to leave with you.
Well, a lot of that's turning off television, and that's why they're having to put some of the truth on TV to keep people tuned into all the other lies they lace.
Right. Well, I would turn off your, you know... One of the things, the three things you can all do in the next 30 days is turn off your TV. You don't need any more entrainment, subliminal programming. Eat fresh food. The food system is killing us. You've got to find local farmers and local food sources or learn to grow your own. And make sure you get fresh water. So for heaven's sakes, get your money out of paper and out of the big bank.
Wow, what you just said is so beautiful. Just getting our body straight. And I'm trying to do that, and it's so hard to get off the coffee and all those type of things and the fattening food. But just as you get more sleep, it makes everything clearer. That's why the globalists try to poison the food and water. They want us off balance.
The last 7 months, do you know what sugar futures are up in the last 7 months? 88%. So if you're not off sugar yet... you're going to get off sugar.
Yeah.
You know, so really what we have, you know, look at what you have under your power and can do in the next 30 days to protect yourself and your family. And the more you do that, the more people who do that, the more we stop being atomized and can connect and find each other.
And support alternative media and organizations.
Yep.
And radio stations and people that tell the truth. Even if you don't have money, spread the word about those. This is how we're going to change the world. I apologize to Michael, George, Sam, Ed, and others. You'll have to call back in tomorrow, but I appreciate you trying. Catherine Austin Fitz, Solari.com. Always amazing to have you on. God bless you, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
God bless you, Alex.
There she goes, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back tomorrow live on the Friday edition, Power Packed, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central, back Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. The globalists are moving at hyperspeed, Mach 10 right now. Afterburners are melting because they've almost got their world government, but we woke up to them, and so it's all badly coordinated. If you stand up and say no, they will fall.